We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Jack Manuel here for another episode of the Brooklyn Buzz. Here is part two of my chat with the lads from Locked On Nets.
Yeah, I've got that in the wardrobe behind me, mate. I'll chuck it on in a sec. But in saying that, we've spoken about players that the stars that could be, you know, lured to Brooklyn. And I put out sort of six names. And, you know, there was a lot of discussion about it. And I was intrigued because, like, every single person had a different response. And that's why, like, the fan base is so great. That's why sports is so great in general. But I want you guys to give your responses to this. Like, rank the following players in terms of how they would fit in Brooklyn. And the six names that I had were 1, Donovan Mitchell, 2, Trae Young, 3, Karl Anthony Towns, 4, Paul George, 5, Alperen Şengün, and 6, Jalen Green. Now, I think that you can, there are many, many answers to this in terms of how you want to take it. But I'm very intrigued for two smart guys like yourselves, how you would answer this in terms of, and yes, I do believe that you guys are very smart, and that's part of the reason why I wanted to get you guys on the pod and always enjoy chatting this with you. But Adam, how would you rank the six?
I always prefer going second in these things, just to make sure, because then afterwards,
Doug, how would you rank the six?
Yourself as being smart, you know, oh my God, I had my list almost exactly the same way. That's totally crazy. A lot of my, you know, a lot of my talking points are the same as yours. Just at the top to clarify, we're taking away money and cost and if you're bringing one of these guys into the team, how would you order them?
Right. Just fit.
Yeah. So based on what you currently have on the team, if you could do it, philosophically, I believe you need to have length that can stretch the floor in size, and the Nets lack it. So I would probably put Karl Anthony Towns right near the top of it, possibly number one. Şengün is young, so you know you're projecting the upside there. I might put, again, he's undersized, but for what the team might need a lot of, it's probably Donovan Mitchell, Trae Young, right in that pocket. Again, based on fit, Paul George, and then I would put Jalen Green because he's young, he's exciting, he's a scorer, but none of these, you know, you need the player that's going to make everybody's life easier around them. And so most of the players on this list, you can make a case, they're elite talents, but the best trickle-down effect, at least on paper, would be Karl Anthony Towns. Now, all of a sudden, it opens everything up. He's a big... He can do things defensively. He can stretch the floor, knock down the three. That'd be my list. What I go if I went with Karl Anthony Towns, Şengün, I'll just for fun of it, I'll say Trae Young, Donovan Mitchell, Paul George, Jalen Green.
Like it, Doug. Anything different? The same?
Oh, come on, he's going to agree.
Yeah, pretty much all different, I think.
Love it.
So
love
I would it. I would eliminate George, Paul George, and Trae for two different reasons right away. George, I would just eliminate because of age, I think, and. Because
the reason why I put him so low too, right? Like if we're taking all that stuff too, then every young guy gets a little bit of a higher bump as well, right?
And I think Trae, we've just seen that they just don't have the guys that to like fit around him. Like I think I'm not even sure it'd be like a massive floor raiser. It might be a little more exciting, but they just don't have any of the other stuff that would like go really well with his skill set. So I think that would be just too heavy a lift. I would say immediate impact wise, I'd say like for both those. Talent and culture fit, I would say Donovan Mitchell first, although he's been playing really bad. I actually was wondering if he's still hurt. But I would still say him first. I would say Şengün second. I would say, and then Şengün goes a little bit more of the rebuild territory. I would say Jalen Green, if you're really just like rebuilding, and I would say Towns fourth, because I worry the Towns. I mean, I guess if they kept Claxton, maybe that's interesting. And maybe I would move Towns up. So anyway, I would definitely say Mitchell first, because I think that's like immediate floor raising impact would be first. I don't think any of these guys make them contenders. I think Mitchell, Şengün, and Towns make them probably the most interesting next steps. And they're all, it's all sort of like flawed fit wise and stuff. And this is like the problem, I think, with the superstar idea. Like we just screwed up the term superstar. Like the definition got screwed up. And so now there's just too many superstars. Too many guys get labeled superstars. And we just need like another term. We just need like super duper stars to describe like the really great guys that can really shift your team. And then there's like the next group. These guys are all part of the next group. It's a good list. Like this is the realistic list, but I just don't know where the Nets get with any of them.
The six seed maybe isn't like, maybe the best way to attack this list too would be like, well, I'd like to take two. Can I take two off of this list? If I can take two off of this list, now you're having a conversation, because you can say, hey, listen, I love Donovan Mitchell. He's a great talent. Now, if I have Donovan Mitchell, then maybe it is, you know, well, Karl Anthony Towns. Well, now we're really building something here. And then where Mikal fits and where Cam Johnson's going to be playing inside of that, right? Even Jalen Green, you want to go young, as Doug kind of mentioned. Listen, I could say, give me Şengün and Green because I want to rebuild. So, the philosophy of what you want to do with these additions would be the one part of it. But I think the strongest argument would be that, like, I need two of these guys to change my perception about becoming a top four seed in the Eastern Conference, conference final contender. At least you need two guys, you need two players to make that happen as this roster currently stands.
Yeah, it harks back to the discussion like we were just talking about earlier, where it's just like the, in 2024, these are the realistic names. Like, there's like, maybe there's someone else. Like, if somehow like the Sixers flame out or the Mavericks fall apart, then maybe like there is one of those 1A, 1B guys, or Giannis maybe even. Who knows? But I don't know, Adam, if you have anything like any different thoughts.
Well, no. Just by the way, like we talked about, these go back like months and months ago. I can't remember. Maybe it was last off season or something. Doug and I had the conversation about Joel Embiid, and we went through these high profile guys. And you go, well, with age, injury concerns, like, would you really go and make that big move to bring it? You know, it's amazing, and you'd be really excited about it for a season and a half, and then you might start to have real concerns about the longevity there. And that's the same thing with a lot of these players too, right? Like Trae Young ceiling or Karl Anthony Towns has some injury concerns there as well. So I think there's that big part of it too. Yes, the name on paper, but it's again the finite of most finite lists. Luka, the Joker, Giannis, right? Like it's only a very few guys that you'd say like, oh, okay, this guy becomes available, you 100% do it. I think there's at least higher than 0% chance that I would have reservations about a lot of other players that you would put up on here and say, how many assets do you want to throw to go get this guy?
And by the way, Jack, I think your list is like totally accurate. Like this is the exact list. The problem is that this list highlights all the problems, right? Like
exactly.
That this is the list is exactly why we've said go another route, right? Like when this is the list, and your team looks like they look like now, which is half checked out, and every third game they kind of check back in and barely win, or fifth game or whatever. And everyone's playing below their. I mean, Mikal's still like a really good contract. Cam's playing below the contract. You might end up overpaying Claxton. Like you don't know what you're doing with Cam Thomas. The problem is that your list is accurate, and that's the problem. It's like, what are they like? What does this really get you? And it doesn't get you much. And is it better to be interesting than bad? For sure. I would probably always take interesting. It's just more fun to do the podcast when Donovan Mitchell's on the team than when, you know, you're talking about like if Lonnie Walker's going to get the play or not. But
I'm still not sure if I like this version of the Kevin Durant version. I'll be honest with you. When we do the show,
you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, yeah, I take all these guys because it makes the team interesting. I'm not sure it gets you anywhere, but yeah, your list is accurate. And your list is also just highlights the larger issues here, which are they've chosen the wrong path. that's all it does to me.
Yeah, it's depressingly accurate. Like, you know, I didn't just throw out, I didn't put in Jason Tatum because he's a free agent in 2025, right, because that's not happening. You know, LeBron James, like I just wanted to see, because the varying responses and like dismissing Trae Young. Like a lot of other people were like, yeah, Trae Young is like the perfect fit. But, you know, when I think about it, I'm like, well, what have the Hawks been the past two or three seasons with Trae Young? And that's basically what the Nets would be. You know, maybe they're like two, three wins better, or maybe they're two or three wins worse. Like, there's not much of a ceiling on a Trae Young.
No, like, Trae Young is the perfect fit with like Wembanyama or LeBron and AD, the teams that he's rumored to go. That's a great fit. It's like he can run pick and roll. He can make threes. He can run his floater in the lane. That's great. Like if he's your third best player or second best player to a guy who could be the best player like Wembanyama, then your team is actually really good. If Trae Young becomes and is your best player, well, we already saw what happens there. Like it just, what new story are you going to tell? Like, yeah, he'd be the best player in the Nets right the second he got in the door. But how much better would the Nets be is like the better question. That's my, it's not like anti-Trae, it's just anti-upside.
And remember, like Donovan Mitchell turned around, but like he removed the needle pointing far more directly up in terms of his value over the course of this season. They, you know, making decisions about it. They lead him on this run. Like he's the catalyst of all of that. There was a point where we said like, oh, Donovan Mitchell is there, but he's not as elevated as other guys. I think too, throughout the discussion, size being the biggest factor. It's like, I would put him above Trae Young, obviously, but he had to recalibrate his narrative too, because Cleveland's only a year removed from not having a successful run as you thought they were going to because they had all these pieces in. And then due to their injuries, Mitchell ends up being kind of this hero figure, you know, dragging the team along this year, and that re-elevates him as well. It should.
Yeah, I think Mitchell is the name that is the most likely. We've heard we've heard him speak to Cavs media about his status of the team going forward. You know, you look at opposing and other teams that could be interested in Donovan Mitchell. You know, the Miami Heat is probably the big team that does come to mind. But, you know, are the Nets going to beat the offer that the Miami Heat are? I would say yes. So that's why it's, you read the tea leaves, and the tea leaves are directing Donovan Mitchell more than likely to Brooklyn. You know, he has a kinship with Mikal Bridges. Whether, like you alluded to, whether that is the right decision, no, it's not, like, unfortunately, but yeah.
I'll tell you what, though, I mentioned this the other day, the New York Knicks, remember, they didn't give up, they put out RJ Barrett in the trade to get OG, so they didn't give up all the assets. They have a ton of draft capital, and now you're starting to hear with this, with the injury with Julius Randle, he's going to be 31 by the end of his contract, how does the money look? Like, I'd be hard-pressed, again, Mitchell has some control about where he goes. Players, I don't think, look at it the same way. It's like, go back Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving. Well, we're going to go to Brooklyn, and we're going to make that the thing. We're going to make that a championship place. So that version of it does exist. But if you're Donovan Mitchell and you're looking around, it's just, it's really, really easy to look a lot of other places and find them incredibly more attractive than what the Nets are doing right now.
And by the way, one more thing too, I would say about Mitchell and these other guys too. If you could just sign them with cap space, my opinion totally changes also, yes, right? If it's just 100%. Like, if it's a cap space signing, then, you know, wheels up on everybody. It's more like when you start thinking about, well, this is why 2025 makes a big difference, because yes, that's when their books clear in such a big way. No more Simmons. He's the big one. You're clear of him. Like Dennis Schroeder's got another year left, so he's gone too. But Simmons is the big one. Like now, all of a sudden, Mikhail's still on their contract. You have a lot. Maybe they don't resign Claxton. Now they have tons and tons of room. If everyone's coming in under cap space and you use the assets for like one more piece, well, that's just a totally different thing. That's the KD plus Kyrie and assets for Harden. That is a good strategy. If your assets out the door for this first group, that's not a good idea.
Yeah, and we literally, like, as we discussed earlier, like, what the Vinets are, and Nets, Bob's pretty tuned into what the Nets want to do and with the decision makers there. And I literally said it, and it was capitalized in the Google Doc, is to trade for big stars. Now, again, that's another decision that we can have qualm with and have many discussions about, which is, like, it doesn't make much sense. Like, I would rather, you know, sign Donovan Mitchell in 2025, have a shitty team this year, and then have more flexibility going forward because you have greater assets, you have, you know, a bit of wiggle room here or there. Is that possible? I don't know. I'm not as great with the cap, you know, machinations as you guys and Nick is, but it's all about what is coming back in return. What are the Nets giving up in return? Like, if you can get Donovan Mitchell for a bargain basement price because he's like, I'm only going to Brooklyn, they're my only team, and we've heard that before. He's said, like, in the past, you know, Miami, Brooklyn, these sort of teams are the ones that he wants to go to. But there are other situations, as you alluded to, Adam, that are more alluring than a Brooklyn Nets team. OKC are going to have some space. The New York Knicks are a much more attractive proposition. Miami, in general, as a franchise and maybe a destination for a lot of NBA players, is more alluring too. So what do the Nets have to offer as a franchise other than, hey, we are in New York, we're just going to catch the train down to Atlantic Avenue? Like, outside of that, where the Nets currently stand in comparison to 5 or 3 years ago when we're trying to get in, you know, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving in the first place, you know, are they in a better spot now than they were now? Absolutely not. So why would it 1, 2, 3 of these guys choose Brooklyn over more alluring propositions in other franchises and other teams?
That's the one thing that I never have just have failed to understand is that, like, and sorry to interrupt you, Adam, but like, it's just like the Nets are not an attractive situation as they currently stand. That's just, everyone has overrated that based on, I'm not even sure what.
It's not, you know, I mean, we still believe that Mikal Bridges is viewed, you know, well around the league and teams, and everyone still thinks that he is a high contributor for a roster. But there's nobody else there. The coach isn't in place. You don't feel necessarily like you have that solved either. So what are you selling a player? And then you don't have to look too far back. You know, will there be a team out there that'll do the Oklahoma City Thunder move, right? And bring in Donovan Mitchell like they did with Paul George. Hey, we're going to try to sell you on it. We'd love to have you around. Okay, you're not going to stay. Now we'll flip you and we'll turn you into the rebuild, the fast-tracking our rebuild. You have Dame Lillard who wants to go to Miami. He doesn't play for Miami. He plays – now, it worked out all right for him. He plays with Giannis, but he did not get to go to his destination, right? So there's also that part of it where I think – we have seen organizations push back a little bit on this idea of players. I'm going to hold you hostage. I go where I want to go. You know, my destination or bust. There is some flexibility there. Why? Because other teams are a little more willing to offer up some possibilities. The one thing, in a good and bad way, whatever the Nets may want to do, in a good way, you have these assets that we believe are valuable. Phoenix, where are they going to be in a couple of years, right? Like, you feel like you have that chest. So that can be appealing to other teams. The bad side of that is you're giving away those really high value assets. And there's a world where 3 years from now, we're sitting there going, now here comes what was the Nets controlled Phoenix pick in the draft. Who are they taking? How do we feel about those prospects? Now we'll watch them from afar. And depending on where the Nets stand at that point, we'll go back and judge it once again. Was it right to get Mitchell? Was it right to make these moves? And so far, the reflective look back at moves keeps coming back with, you know, negative returns from a Nets perspective, from a Sean Marks perspective.
For sure. I want to end with a couple. We've got so much more on this, Doc, but it's maybe we save it for another day. Maybe we find another time to record again, because I love chatting Nets hoops with you guys. But I wanted to finish.
We don't have a lot to say, just to be clear, Jack. We're really scraping. We're doing our best.
That's why I've got these topics, mate. If you want to use these for some Locked On Nets topics, go for it. But make sure you credit for the Brooklyn Buzz for coming up with them as well. But no, I want to finish with two things. One, the head coaching search. And two, let's finish on a bright note and talk about the Nets in somewhat of a positive fashion. Doug, you put out today, I threw this on my doc literally as soon as I was scrolling through the timeline, and you are like, Kevin Ollie is the next Nets head coach. Man, said that a couple of times. But why? Like, why did you even say this? And why were your mentionings and DMs blowing up? Because, well, Kevin Ollie's been good for Cam Thomas.
Why, Doug?
Why, mate? Why?
Well, okay, so I probably got a little over my skis here by saying I basically said I thought it was even odds that he would be next coach. I didn't think – so just to clarify one thing, I did not say that I thought he – I didn't even say he was the favorite. I just thought it was probably like 50-50, much less like zero. I think most people are operating in the 0% chance he's the coach for next year, and I think that the number is higher than that. I do not think it's 100%, but I would put it higher than I think most people think it's a foregone conclusion that he'll be fired. So I'm just going to caveat that statement. I probably did a bad job of phrasing it like that, but whatever. I think that the reason I put it at non-zero is, and hilariously, is the same reason I didn't think Jacque Vaughn was going to be fired. And I was totally wrong about this. So, you know, take this for all that it's worth, is that I just don't know how attractive this job is to anybody else coming in. I probably understated that part, because coaching jobs just don't grow on trees, and there's only so many of them. And if you have a chance to go from somewhere else as assistant to, you know, be a head coach, even in an uncertain situation, it's probably worth it to do. But I did wonder if the Nets kind of hold court here and don't really make any moves. You know, they maybe like re-sign Claxton, and the roster is basically the rest of the same. It seems just gonna be bad again. And I just don't know why you would do this to another, a new coach, where you just set them up to be kind of just bad for a year and then unclear about what's going to happen after that. And so I did wonder if they would just maybe stay the course with Ollie for another year, make him a lame duck coach, because putting someone else new in the situation is just, it has to be setting them up to fail unless they're sure that they're going to make some crazy move. But we all kind of just talked about it. It's like, doesn't seem that likely. So that was my reasoning behind it. It really wasn't pro Kevin Ollie at all. It was more seeing the rest of these moves and just being like, who wants to do this? Like, what person that you would get, that you could get the fan base excited about, would actually want to take this job right now? Like, I don't know, no one's coming out of retirement to coach this team, right? So, like, just like, let's take the Coach Buds off the list, I think, for sure. And then everyone else just retreads the same old names that are never coaching again. So take those guys off the list.
See, I now don't you're looking you, at. I don't think you do. Like, I was gonna push back in a little bit, okay. But I think what we've seen with Monty Williams, Steve Kerr, Eric Spoelstra is that money talks. If you give if you give Mike Budenholzer 5 years, $60 million deal as a head coach, man, like, I'll come back, and if you fire me, I've got this cushion. And I remember, it just harks back to when I was listening to some pod where it's just like, what is the best thing a coach can do when they're choosing their situation, as you're alluding to it? They can get a long contract. They can get a lot of money. That's the security that they can get. And would you rather be doing that in a situation in Brooklyn, which isn't ideal, as you alluded to, but you're getting paid a good amount and you've got a long-term contract, so you have that security? Or would you rather keep drudging, keep, you know, doing the assistant stuff, figuring out the X's and O's for, you know, six figures, five figures, whatever it might be, in comparison to having a lot of money, a lot of security? I think money kind of would, like, money is the thing that would say, here, Mr. Budenholzer, come out of retirement. Here, Mr. D'Antoni, come out of retirement. We'll give you 2 years, $50 million or something like that. That's where I think it could override the rationale that you're sort of coming from.
Yeah, and I probably have, like, criminally underrated that part, I'm realizing. And the Monty Williams example is a good one. It would also feel to me crazy to do that, but I'm also not a billionaire, so I can't get into the minds of these guys either. So, and I think I probably need to go back to, if I'm just going to, you know, revert back to the opening statements around Cy, I definitely haven't factored that part of it in, where they just, like, you know, just back the Brinks truck up and just say, here you go. You know, we might be bad for a year, but whatever, you'll be rich. And that is a scenario that I probably would amend my odds on now, because I just didn't really consider that. And you're definitely right.
Well, that's why it's like, you know, the whoopsie-daisy, like, the whoopsie-daisy fund is way bigger for Joe Tsai than it is for, you know, Doug Norrie, for Adam, for Jack, right? Like, we make mistakes and there's a punitive long-term impact there, or there's, you know, financial impact, let alone. The only thing I would say, like, on, say, the Monty Williams, now that's TBD, right? And I would never, we don't do this with, like, athletes. We wouldn't do it with coaches either, because their desire to be good and, you know, build a great culture and, you know, be the guy that resurrects a franchise like Detroit. Awesome. But also, once you pay all the money, you know, where is the conviction and commitment necessarily, right? Because on paper, you have to sell an established, talented, respected head coach to come coach your team. But in order to get you there, we're going to dump a ton of money at your feet, because we know if we said just dollar for dollar match, you would pick almost any other job. So you're already getting the acknowledgement from that head coach. I don't believe this thing can work. That's why I don't want to come here. But if you throw enough money at me, then I will. So when it doesn't work out, to your point, Jack, like, hey, made a ton of money. I know that's not the only way. That's not the way this necessarily gets thought about. But Monty Williams was not going to coach Detroit unless they gave him all that money. So you understand how he felt, even with youth, even with draft picks, right? He did not see that as the best landing spot. And they had to really convince him to come do that. So I would have my concerns in that vein. I think something we'll talk about more in the offseason, obviously, because people have asked this too. I'm sure they have with you, Jack. It's, you know, who are the assistant coaches you really like? I don't know, right? Like, I mean, I have to go look at all these guys and figure out who would be a great candidate. But I would almost think, if not Kevin Ollie, you'd like to, you know, where's the Kenny Atkinson, right? Like, where's the next guy that you believe can come in and build, develop, and start to get this thing moving in the right direction? So it is fascinating. But when Doug said that, it made me at least do a second thought on Kevin Ollie and what it means, at least over the short term of this next season.
Yeah, I agree that there's a non-zero chance that Kevin Ollie returns. And like we've sort of seen Jacques Vaughan 2.0. He's essentially a better version of Jacques Vaughan. You know, he's got great man management. I think he's a better developer. I think he's much better with the X's and O's too. But I want to, you know, I've said this immediately upon Jacques Vaughan's firing. I'm more in the route of not D'Antoni, not Budenholzer, not Mark Jackson, not these sort of people. I want to like find, you know, the next Kenny Atkinson, and you know, it's not going to be Kenny Atkinson, even though Kenny Atkinson might be the better fit. For me, it's like a Chris Quinn. Like I want our version of Mark Degnold, our version of, you know, Chris Finch. I want our version of these sort of guys that are, you know, hiding, and they just need that opportunity to really showcase their basketball now. So Eric Spoelstra was a video guy. Like, you know, all these different sort of things. I think, you know, we've seen that Kenny Atkinson, I think, is a good head coach. And I think, like, he'll be better in, like, Charlotte, you know, than probably was in Brooklyn. But that's a discussion for another day. But, yeah, the way it's going to be a key decision. And again, another one that Sean Marks is getting the opportunity to probably make, at least as we currently stand. And he's made it for Steve Nash, he made it for Jacques Vaughan, and both those guys are fired. So Joe Tsai right now, despite having the billions and billions in reserve, billionaires don't want to spend money where it's going nowhere. And money is going nowhere to a fired Steve Nash, to a fired Jacques Vaughan. So the next decision to hire a head coach might be underrated in terms of, you know, the decision making. You know, obviously I think the players and the roster matters much more, but you know, the Nets have already failed miserably twice in terms of hiring a head coach. And if you want to count Kenny Atkinson in that, three times in Sean Marks' tenure. The fourth one, it has to work. Like it just has to. And I think the safer route for me is that assistant, build with them long term. It doesn't cost as much, but you know, you give them security with like a 4 or 5 year sort of deal compared to Mike Budenholzer, 3 years, $50-60 million. But I don't know, maybe I'm more safe in my decision making and don't have the billionaire risk taking of a Joe Tsai.
But you know, and one way that Sean Marks can prevent hiring a fourth head coach is to do the Marvel Endgame snap of the fingers, reset the universe, and just hire Kenny Atkinson back, right? Because then I'm saying this completely as a joke, to be clear, but I love the idea from a narrative building standpoint. Let's wipe everything out, come right back in with Kenny Atkinson, no superstars, and we got this young core that we believe. Kenny Atkinson, watch out, guys, we're going to the playoffs. It would be just chef's kiss, quintessential Sean Marks Brooklyn Nets.
Oh, Lord. But speaking of chef's kiss, let's end on a positive note. What have been some bright spots for both of you guys personally for the Nets this season? Doug, what has been, whether it's players, whether it's been uniforms? Like, I got this from a Nets Reddit post.
That was a short list of options, Doug.
Well, like, literally, on the
uniforms.
Like on the Nets Reddit post, like, one of those guys, like, the in-house, like, DJ and music at Barclays Center. I'm like, I mean, they're scraping the barrel there, and I haven't been to any games this season, but I think that there are some bright spots, Doug. Surely, Trenton Watford, Cam Thomas, Noah Clowney.
Yeah, I think that like this late season push of just now being forced to see some of these young guys is probably, you know, forced into a good situation. I also think that it's not good, but I think it is not the worst thing that they got a long look at Bridges in this role. And probably, like, I think the build would have been, if they had to done it a year at the end of last year and had been given a chance to do something else, they would have valued Bridges higher. And I wonder if like getting a longer look at Bridges in this role hopefully has them a little more realistic around what it needs. So I would actually put that as a good thing, even though it was kind of rough to watch. But I'd say that, and then just, you know, getting to see Noah Clowney and probably getting the training wheels off Cam Thomas. I'm sorry if I'm taking all Adams here, but like, I think there are some general positives, but you got to dig deep here. It's been pretty rough.
I think the Brooklyn Nets, you know, when they come out commercial breaks, I just think the routines are fantastic. They got a lot of rhythm. I could never do it. And I think the t-shirt cannons have been a real plus for them this year. No, I mean, listen, the Noah Clowney piece, it's such a small sample, right? He's played 186 minutes, but the fact that when, at the time that he was drafted, we went and watched him, right? You see him in the summer league, Doug. And I said, all right, he's only 19. So you can wait a year. You can wait 2 years, and that's okay to develop him. So the fact that you've seen him really come on here and showcase some things, shooting the three pointer at the NBA level, has the versatility, it looks like, to play at the four, right? Some small ball five options too. I think that that's, you know, listen, you like the idea that he can come and continue to be a contributor going into next season. So there is at least that young, another young player to add into the Cam Thomas pool. And I think, Doug, actually, it's a really good point Doug brings up. Sample size is important here. You learned a lot about McHale. You learned a lot about Cam Johnson, even if it's just that, hey, he's never, like, seriously injured, but he's always a little injured a lot of the time. And then maybe, listen, the guy we didn't talk about, maybe the Ben Simmons, you know, we never knock a player for being injured because it's out of their control. But maybe the fact that his body, again, continues to show it's breaking down, that may have been a positive, too, because I think those things will inform how they approach this offseason. And if Ben had been healthy and if McHale had played a little bit better, then that might have convinced them to go to a path that I still think would have been the wrong choice when it comes to, you know, big decisions, big star hunting.
I like the way you guys looked at it in terms of what have been abject negatives in terms of how Mikal Bridges has performed, the lack of Ben Simmons performing at all, as positives. Like, it just makes me think about, man, maybe the Nets season has actually been good, and I'm just thinking about it wrong. But
No. I don't want you to misunderstand. It has not been good. This is when you're forced into a corner and you have to say something nice. Like, then when you have to say something nice, then it's like when you sit down, it's like, well, maybe, you know, when you sit down for an interview, it's like, well, you know, what's some negative things about you? It's like, my negative is that I'm too positive. You know,
I work too hot.
It's just not, it doesn't
when
end
I leave
up being
the party where the beer was right hot, answer.
You just record,
you know, and
it.
The egg salad tasted a little funky. I say, I got to tell you, though, very comfy sofa, and I'll see you next time. You know what I mean? So right, yeah. Find that silver line.
Yeah, look, there hasn't been a lot of silver lining, as you guys were sort of alluding to. I personally, I've really enjoyed watching Trenton Watford play this season. I just think he's a really unique player. And this little late season surgery where he's like averaging like 15 points on like really high shooting splits, getting the opportunity to like showcase his versatile skill set. You know, he's everything that I think some people wanted Ben Simmons to be. But I also think that, and he's like 22, 23. Like, this is a guy that could be a long-term-ish sort of piece. I think he could be. You know, I think he is a rotation player going forward for whatever team it could be. Whether it's in the Nets, I hope it is. And I really enjoyed the early season surge from Lonnie Walker. I think Cam Thomas has been not a revelation, because I think a lot of people expected this from him. But I've really enjoyed seeing him blossom. And as we discussed him earlier, the growth points for him that a lot of people were saying, oh, he's just a gunner. Well, he's not. Like, we've seen that. Mm-hmm. And yes, his numbers might not show he's going to be Chris Paul or Rajon Rondo, but he makes the right decisions. And I discussed that with AJ of Nets Kingdom yesterday. Like, seeing him just make the right decisions, seeing him show that effort, seeing him mentoring Noah Clowney made my heart full. Like, that was a bright spot for me and you guys. Cam Thomas, Noah Clowney. I don't need Donovan Mitchell, Mikal Bridges. Cam Thomas, Noah Clowney. Those are my foundational pieces moving forward, lads.
I'll very quickly just say, when they got Schroeder after everything with Dinwiddie and the trades and et cetera, that was also just a reminder of, oh, what does a veteran experienced player look like in terms of his influence? He's the guy in timeouts that pulls everybody together and talks to them. He clearly has the motor, right? He's going chest to chest with Smith, you know, and the Pacers, whatever. Like, there was just something about that, I think, too. Same thing with, like, Dennis Smith Jr. hasn't been healthy. You see a certain mentality about guys. You go, oh, yeah, like, you do need those glue kind of guys, those pieces that galvanize a little bit. So I won't acknowledge that was also said, noticing that Mikal Bridges is not that guy, but that's a negative. So we'll stay on the positive side. So there's been those little bits, those little crumbs.
Love it. Love it. Lads, it's been an absolute pleasure. This has been an insane pod. Can't wait to chat with you guys again in the future. But Doug, Adam, where can we find Locked On Nets? Where can we find your personal accounts? You got to be following these guys. They are must follows on every single account. YouTube's going gangbusters. Doug, Adam, where do we find you, lads?
Oh, Adam, you can find it. Us on. Oh, is it you, Doug, or me? No, I'll take it. You got
you.
It.
You I told you to hit it. Yeah.
We'll be over on Twitter at Doug Norrie, at Adam Orenbreg, at Locked On Nets, YouTube at Locked On Nets as well, podcast feeds, all that good stuff. And then wegotnets.com. We're starting to build that up over there. We've been running a pretty cool 5 Nets stories in 5 days that you can sign up to get. It just highlights some of the great stories throughout the franchise history. We're going to be rolling out more of that stuff. We're going to be rolling out some merch along the way, too. So check us out there, man. We're just, guess what? Doesn't matter what this team is doing on the court. We only do more Nets content as we roll along.
That's the same for us. I only wish we had the same dedication as you guys. You guys are absolute legends. Appreciate you fully so much. We'll do this again soon. And make sure you follow on Adam, Doug, and all those platforms. Make sure you get that merch. Make sure you sign up for the newsletters. It's been a goddamn pleasure, lads. Appreciate you guys.
Appreciate you.
Thanks, man. Thanks, man. It was awesome.